some conflict.
There it is. Can you hear me when the mic's on the floor?
At my feet? That's what that dragon sound was that I heard it walked up. Okay. Conflict. It's everywhere. And if you think that there wasn't conflict in even the seed of the church as it was being put together, you're mistaken, because there was conflict there. This is an event, a moment in the life of those beginning seeds of the church. Before Jesus has even founded the church, he's just got a few disciples together. But even then, conflict would occur among these disciples. And here's a case in Mark chapter 3. Or no, chapter 9. See, I can't see without these things. Chapter 9. This is from the Message version of this passage, from 33 to 41. They came to Capernaum. When he was safe at home, he, Jesus, asked them, "What were you discussing on the road?" The silence was deafening. They had been arguing with one another over who among them was the greatest. He sat down and he summoned the 12. "So, you want first place? Then take the last place. Be the servant of all." He then put a child in the middle of the room, and then cradling this little one in his arms, he said, "Whoever embraces one of these children as I do, embraces me. And far more than me, you embrace God who sent me." Then John spoke up, "Teacher, we saw a man using your name to expel demons, and we stopped him because he wasn't in our group." Jesus was not pleased. "Don't stop him. No one can use my name and do something good and powerful, and then in the next breath, cut me down. If he's not an enemy, he's an ally. By anyone, by just giving you a cup of water in my name, is on our side. Count on it, that God will notice." So I want you to imagine now for a moment. For those of you old enough, we'll go with the show I Love Lucy. But for those of you who are younger, I want you to think about The Big Bang Theory, because that's a show you might know. But then again, you can think of any television show, any movie, any novel you read, anything that entertains you like that, and realize that every story has conflict in it. For Lucy, conflict was part of the show. There was always conflict. If it wasn't conflict with her husband over misunderstanding his accent, it was conflict over her wanting to be on his show. It was conflict in getting a job at a candy factory where the candy's going by so fast she can't even keep up with it, and her and Ethel start stuffing it in their mouths, or she's stomping on grapes. You know, there was conflict as part of the show, and it entertained us. If you're watching The Big Bang Theory, there's always conflict among the principal actors in there, either with themselves or with someone else. Sheldon is like the magnet, apparently, for conflict, because he lives differently, a mindset that doesn't connect with everyone else the same. So conflict makes the jokes funny. But conflict isn't always as funny for those of us who are in the midst of it. Conflict is something that most of us try to avoid. We want to avoid any conflict we can get into because conflict is tough. It's painful. And so we always try to find ways to avoid it. And some of those ways of avoidance are actually feeding and fueling conflict and making it worse. Maybe we need to reframe conflict. Reframe the way we look at it. Not as something we want to avoid, but as something that is a gift. That conflict is a gift given to us to help us grow. To teach us. That conflict is also a gift given to us, not only to help us grow as disciples, but also to help us grow closer to one another. Conflict raises up some issue that we need to work through. Conflict raises up an issue that helps us even look to God for help so we can grow closer to God. I'll give you an example of a conflict that I think was just like this. Years ago, when I was early on in my ministry serving at the church in Lower Bucks at Humeville Church, Chamonix, I was in a group with other clergy, the United Methodist clergy. We would meet every Tuesday for Bible study and prayer and coffee and donuts. And one of my colleagues was serving the Cornwall Heights United Methodist Church, which is in the Big Toe of Bucks County. You know what I mean by the Big Toe? You know a bit. You know that Bucks County looks like a foot, like a boot? Down that Big Toe of the boot, that's where Cornwall Heights Methodist is. It's where, right before you cross the line into the Philadelphia area. Cornwall Heights got a gift of conflict because they were given land by a member who had passed away and deeded this land to them. And they were faced with a decision. We can take this land and build a new church on it and sell this building that's costing us a lot of money. Or we can take that land and sell it and use that money to help us fix up the building we're in. And guess what happened? Conflict. Because as soon as you offered a choice, as soon as they realized they had a decision to make, people started taking sides. And people started, you know, demonizing the other side because you don't know what you're talking about. And you don't understand. And they took sides to the issue. And Pastor John was struggling with this church, like, you know, how do we deal with this? You know, and as I listened to him tell the story, to me it seemed kind of from the outside, not being invested in this emotionally, objectively, it was like, it doesn't matter which decision you make. Both are good decisions. You can build a new church and start a ministry in a different area. Maybe, you know, start attracting people you've been missing. Or you can fix this building up and use some of it for advertising with the money. You know, they can do all kinds of things. Either way, God would bless whichever decision they made. The real test wasn't which decision they made. The real test was, how will they deal with one another in the midst of this? How will they work with one another? And I think that's what conflict is the gift to us about. That's why conflict comes into our lives. It can be a test to see how are we going to deal with this? How will we work out the situation between us? Is there a right and a wrong? Or is it not so much an important decision whether we go this way or that way? God will bless us whichever decision we make. But he wants to see how we'll work together and grow from this situation. And I think that's usually the case. I think in conflict, God is asking us to look at ourselves. Make some decisions about what can we agree to and what do we have to not agree on. How can we get along in the process? Conflict is a great teacher. Because as a psychologist from the last century brought up, her idea was that conflict is like the beginning of awareness. Conflict is what opens us up to seeing something we haven't seen before. It's in the conflict that we suddenly become aware of another side to something. I think in our country today, we're seeing this great divide among people that's caused a great conflict. And maybe the conflict is raising us up and saying, look, obviously there are people who think and see things completely different than you and I. And the struggle for us is to understand what they see, to listen. And it's very difficult. It's very difficult because it's an emotionally charged thing. For me, with Cornwall Heights, it was easy for me to make a decision because I wasn't emotionally invested in the building they were in or in any of the changes they would have to go through. From the outside, it's always a lot easier. And in the situations we're facing today, of course, the conflicts are emotionally charged. I have my views fed by my faith, fed by my reading of scripture, fed by the theological place that I stand in. And so I stand strong in that. And then there are people who stand on the very opposite side of those things, yet they claim to be using the same theological standards. And it's a very challenging thing for me personally to be able to deal with the conflict. But I see how Jesus takes conflict and uses it for a moment of clarity to invest in. I want to ask you a question today. You heard about the disciples arguing on the road. They're fighting on the road, and Jesus wants to know what they were fighting about, and they're embarrassed because they were fighting about who among them is the greatest. Why do you think they were fighting about that? Why were they arguing about that? This is where you get to answer. I know it's tough. I had to stop and think for a while, so I'm going to give you a moment to think. What do you think was going on inside of, put yourself in the disciples' place. You've been with Jesus for a little while now. You've been walking with him, listening to him. You've left behind your family. You're following this guy who you believe is going to be king. He's going to set up a new kingdom. And you want a place in the kingdom. Why do you start arguing with your fellow disciples, your friends, these people that you've come to know? Why are you arguing with them about who's best? Wanted Jesus to love them more.
Ego.
Say that?
Ego.
Ego. Their egos are weak. Their egos maybe are being taken a hit and they want to be stronger. What else?
James and John's mother actually approached Jesus, didn't she?
Yeah.
About who was sitting in his right hand when he came into his kingdom.
Yeah, she went to him and said, can you put one on your right, one on your left? She wanted them to have the top two positions. Why? You got an answer?
Prestige.
Prestige? Say that again. They want to know who is the greatest. How do you find out? Now, how do people do this generally? Do people, when you're battling somebody over whether you're better than them or not, how do we usually do that? Do we sit there and, you know, do the Muhammad Ali, well, I'm the greatest. How do we usually do it? We diminish the other. What were you saying?
It's kind of like, well, I did this, and I did this.
Well, sometimes we do that, well, I did this. But it's so much easier to tell what the other person did wrong. And so we diminish them. We tell them all the things that they've done wrong. You know, you think you're so good? Look what you did. Peter, you're not that great. Look what you, when you said that, he told you to get behind him. He called you Satan. I mean, there's, you know, it's, you know, when we fight over who's the greatest, usually we're trying to diminish the other. We knock each other down so that we're the last one standing. And we're doing that for a reason, because we're not very secure. I think the disciples are feeling insecure around Jesus. They're beginning to question, am I good enough for this mission? Am I the one that can do it? There's inadequacy, self-esteem issues. I think they're going through all of this stuff and beginning to have doubts. And so they're beginning to turn on each other in their fear of their standing with Jesus or their standing with themselves. Garth Brooks, the country singer, has said that the greatest conflicts don't take place between two or more people. They take place between one person and him or herself. In other words, your greatest conflicts are between me, myself, and I. You know, that's where you fight the most. You're the heart and the head, the fighting back and forth. And I think Paul was struggling with that as we looked in scripture. Paul struggled with the head and heart. As Paul was dealing with coming to preach and teach to the Corinthians, he's getting nowhere, it feels like. He feels like they're fighting with him all the time. Everything he says, they're disagreeing with it. And he finds himself at a certain point just walking out. He says, I've had it with you guys. You know, as the message puts it, you make your bed, now lie in it. And he walks out of the meeting place, frustrated, ready to quit on him. Goes next door to a friend's house, vents to him, and then he goes to prayer. And it's while he's in prayer that he discovers God hasn't given up. And God, in fact, helps him to see things a little more clearly in this conflict that he's having. Because the conflict that he's having is not with the Gentiles, the Greeks, and the Jews that are fighting him on this. The real conflict is inside his heart, between his heart and his head. Because his head is saying, you're not doing anything, you're not making a difference, nobody's listening to you. And his heart is saying, but I care about these people, I love them, and I don't want to give up. And so he's back and forth. And so God says, Paul, take a look at who you have reached already. The head of the meeting house, the president of the meeting house, is a follower of Jesus because of you. That's going to pay off big. I've made an important connection with him. Thank you, Paul. Paul, look around. Look at some of the people who are already following you. You've got a beginning. You've started something. And Paul finds in prayer, he gets encouraged again. Right. It's working. I guess he just got so frustrated with those who were struggling with him. And as a pastor, I know sometimes that's how it seems. You know, I can have 100 people who are going along, who are really good at getting it, and one person who can be your sort of nemesis that brings you conflict, and you walk out always feeling like you're not making a difference because that one person. I used to have that happen at Neshaminy. There was a woman who cracked me up when I think back on it now, but at the time it wasn't so funny. Every Sunday, people would walk out saying wonderful things, but she always had some comment. She'd say something, I remember one Sunday in particular, she said, see, oh, I brought you the newsletter from the church I visited the shore. See how the pastor just writes this little paragraph? And it's so meaningful, and it makes such a difference. It's not like that long stuff you write in the newsletter that I can't understand. And she smiled and walked up, and I was like, oh, I just got punched in the gut. Oh. And like, that's all I could think about the rest of the day. Forget all the wonderful things they did. One negative thing took on a monstrous view in my point because the conflict was there. And that's what happens with conflict. We let it take over. But conflict is meant as a gift to help us move on. I learned something from that. I took it like a guy, I remember hearing a story of a guy who was walking along and a coconut fell and hit him on the head from a monkey. And he was, you know, it hurt. But he picked up the coconut and he said, thank you for the coconut that I can get some milk from it. And I thought about that, what this woman said, and I thought, okay, I need to pare down what I'm trying to say, get to the point. I tend to go on and on and on. That's why the last service has been late. So, we need to look at conflict from a different perspective. We need to understand it's not something that's come into our life and is meant to destroy us, but it's to be used not as an obstacle, but as a stepping stone towards growth. To look at the conflict and say, all right, Lord, thank you for this conflict. This is something that I can grow from. I can learn something from this. Help me to understand. The disciples in their conflict with one another were worried about their standing with Jesus, worried about their standing with God and themselves. And so they were starting to tear each other apart, to put each other down. Jesus confronts them with it. You're not to be a doormat when it comes to conflict and just let people walk over you. You're meant to use it to step in and say, all right, we gotta work something out here. Let's listen to each other. Let's talk. So Jesus says, let's tell me what you were arguing about. So they finally did. So he takes a child and he says, you see this little kid? This little boy? Little girl? The most vulnerable member in society, the most vulnerable member has no voice, no power, can't own anything. This little child has nothing, has no ability to do anything in this world. They're just a commodity in their community at that point. Says, you need to be like that. Instead of trying to be the boss, telling people what to do, You need to become the person who shows people what can be done. And lead by example. And lead with your heart and your mind and sing. And so Jesus shows them another way to look at this. It's not about being powerful the way we define power. It's not about strength the way we define strength. It's not about making a difference the way we think makes a difference. That little kid was lifted up as an example of power and strength and the ability to make a difference from a position that no one would have guessed. And the more we start to get that, the more we start to understand how children can lead by being who they are, the more we can understand how God is using us. Not to fight for positions, but to serve from love. And once we start walking that path, the obstacles to living the abundant life are removed. They become stepping stones. And conflicts become one of those stepping stones to experiencing the beauty, because they'll bring us closer together as we listen to one another. Will bring us closer to God in the process. Amen?